and welcome to Edible Ocean Podcast, episode 4 of our second season. I'm Edith Wilson Sousa, the audio and production assistant for the show. Today, Professor Tony chats all things aquaculture with Professor Ramon Figuera of Dalhousie University. They talk pros and cons of different aquaculture methods and the role of aquaculture in our food supply. Plus, Professor Tony continues exploring recirculating aquaculture systems, or RAS, which he discussed with Megan Sorby in episode 2. So, without any further ado, here's Professor Tony interviewing Professor Ramon Figuera.
My name is Ramon Figuera, and I am an associate professor in the Marine Affairs Program at Dalhousie University.
We're really, it's a real pleasure to have you on the Edible Oceans podcast. And today we're going to talk about aquaculture, a topic that we have broached in our first season, but we never really did get into it in any great depth. And we're going to try to remedy that today to provide some, we think, valuable information about what's becoming a very, very important activity in providing humans with food all around the globe. So, without further hesitation, let's get right into it. Could I ask you, Dr. Figuera, to give us, give our listeners an idea of the importance of aquaculture in meeting our food requirements today?
Sure. So, aquaculture production has been increasing over years, and their most recent stats indicate that in 2022, aquaculture production has set a new record of production that is around 131 million tons, which it's a significant amount of food, and this is particularly relevant for Southeast Asia, where aquaculture is a fundamental part of the food production system. To give you some additional context, in 2022 was the first year in which the production of animals from aquaculture has surpassed the capture fisheries. So we are at a point in which aquaculture not only is producing more seafood than fisheries, but more animals. This is important in the context of to make that distinction is important in the context of Canadian aquaculture, because we usually don't think about seaweeds as a part of aquaculture, but they play a huge role in Asia, and they make up a significant amount of food.
Yes, I mean, that's sort of a landmark event when aquaculture sort of is equal to that of wild-caught fisheries in terms of what it's providing for our food today. Could you give us some idea of what countries are the major players in aquaculture, and what type of species are they known to produce?
Sure. So China is definitely the top producer and dominates the production of fish, crustaceans, mollusks, and algae, from fish to prawns, shrimp, oysters, mussels, and all the algae that they consume there. And neighborhood countries, India, Indonesia, and Vietnam also play a big role. When we move outside Southeast Asia, we have some big players. Norway is a big player in salmon production, and salmon is a very valued commodity. So in terms of value production, Norway plays a huge role. It's not the same 1 ton of salmon versus 1 ton of seaweed, right? Chile is also a big player, producing salmon and mussels. And we can not forget that freshwater aquaculture also plays a huge role in some parts of the world, like the Middle East, and Egypt is a big producer of tilapia, and also a decent role, decent player in terms of aquaculture production. In terms of Canadian aquaculture, We are not a big player. We are between the 25th, 30th country in terms of production, and we mostly produce fish, 75%, and mollusks, 25%. However, in terms of value, that 75% of fish makes up 90% of the value.
And in terms of that fish, would it mostly be salmon?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, salmon and a little bit of trout, but mostly salmon.
Having said that and sort of laid that out a bit, I'm wondering if you could just tell us what you consider to be some of the main benefits of aquaculture as it's practiced today. And, you know, are some types of agriculture more desirable than others, for example?
Yeah, so I think that the major benefit of aquaculture is food, right? And food security is very relevant for countries in the global south. They rely on aquaculture to bring food to the table. But I also think that there are patterns changing in the Western world. And we saw this during the COVID pandemic, in which governments wanted to have a local production of food, and having aquaculture play a role on those situations in which perhaps the global markets were blocked and the supply chains were disrupted. So I think that is not only relevant for the global south, but also relevant for the Western world. This shocks in the supply chain can push aquaculture towards a more regionalized type of production. Imagine that now all salmon or oysters that we produce in Canada cannot be sold to the US because we have tariffs, right? So keeping those things around. The other major benefit, I think, that, and is relevant in the context of Canadian aquaculture, is the provision of rural jobs and livelihoods. Right now, we are talking about the emergence of a new disease for oysters that can kill oysters within a few years. And we are thinking about all those communities that rely on small farms and small ownership to bring revenue to the community. So those are, from my perspective, the major benefits that we humans obtain from aquaculture. But other species like mussels, oysters, and seaweeds, they play a huge role on providing other ecosystem services. For example, they improve water quality, they remove nutrients from the ocean, mitigating eutrophication. So they provide services that we don't usually account for when we think about aquaculture, but they are very relevant. And regarding the second part of the question, what's the most desirable type of aquaculture? I would say that now we have a strong push from governments on low trophic species. These are species that occupy the base of the food web, like seaweeds and mollusks, oysters and mussels. And they play a very relevant role because we don't need to feed them. So this is a big difference compared to fed aquaculture like carnivores, salmon, trout, that they require feed. So I think that this is going to be very relevant if human population keeps increasing and we need to provide healthy food.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just also wondering if you could comment on the role of agriculture, given what's happening to wild fish stocks. And, you know, we know that some of the important fish stocks are being depleted and have been depleted. So how does agriculture fit into that reality that we're facing around the globe?
Yeah, so I assume that you are talking about the use of feed for, or...
Well, I was thinking about, you know, as a food source for human populations, wild-caught fish stocks are in decline, generally, in many, many areas. It seems that agriculture is moving to fill the gap, and is maybe, unless we really turn this around in terms of the wild-caught fishery, we're going to rely more and more on aquaculture, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So I think that the estimates and projections indicate that aquaculture can fill this this gap. But I think that we need to rethink and perhaps consider the type of seafood that we want to eat. As I mentioned, I think that there is a significant opportunity for low trophic species to provide seafood animal protein at a very low carbon footprint, very sustainable food. And actually, these species can also fill a very relevant gap that is in which we have a strong link between fisheries and aquaculture, that is the need for fish meal and fish oil that comes from fisheries that we use to feed our carnivores, our salmons, our trouts. We think that that we can grow mussels, we can grow tunicates, other species that could be used as the feed for these species. And that would reduce pressure on fisheries and wild populations, ensuring the sustainability of aquaculture.
Yeah, very interesting, yeah. I recall, though, one of the workshops I attended some years ago about, with respect to the feed, for instance, for salmon stocks or salmon farming, that the feed industry was concerned to keep the omega-3 levels in the feed at high levels and would so how could that be accomplished given what you just said about using other species as feed rather than, you know, feeder fish?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that that's fish nutrition is one of the key bottlenecks, but also opportunities for salmon and fed aquaculture in general. We have reduced the need for fish oil and fish meal using new feed and relying more on agricultural products. And actually, right now, when you talk about the trophic level of this species, we are seeing that salmon is not a pure carnivore anymore. It's eating vegetables and using leftovers or byproducts from other seed, from other food production systems as part of that feed. So I think that there is a there is room for improvement there and opportunities for technology, research and development to keep increasing the sustainability of the feed. In the old times, it would require 80% wild fish to feed salmon. Nowadays, we are at a very lower percentage, suggesting that things are improving. In fact, there is a diet that doesn't require at all wild fish. This diet relies on the production of a yeast that could be used dissolve organic matter and particular matter to grow, but that yeast requires a modification of a gene and therefore is not implemented. But we have the technology to grow salmon without fish.
Yeah, that's really, really fascinating. So the idea that we should consider salmon not so much as pure carnivores, but as omnivores, much like our domestic dog.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, maybe sticking to salmon, you know, in Canada, there's been much controversy about open pen salmon operations in the ocean, particularly when it's near river mouths. Which has been the case in British Columbia. And, well, why is this? Well, experts have said that this has led to the infection of wild salmon smolts, the migrating salmon from from the rivers to the sea with sea lice from the salmon farms. And also they pointed out to local marine ecology being damaged by the feces from these very concentrated salmon operations. You already talked about the feed industry, and that seems to be moving in a more positive direction. But how are such issues, particularly with salmon farming giving its very high value, how are these issues being handled in other countries? And let me just ask you that, and then I want to ask a supplementary question.
Sure. So I think that in other countries, especially Norway, Norway is the flagship in terms of technological progress and opportunities to improve the sustainability of aquaculture. And site selection becomes key on this, ensuring that you have farms that are distant enough that they are not physically connected, and to mitigate the spread of diseases. I think that, coming back, I used COVID as an example, right? Before, to talk about the connections across the world. We know that if you minimize those connections, you spread the transmission of diseases. So in Norway, they have a very strong plan that minimizes that by site selection. In Canada, we have that. Actually, in Passamaquoddy Bay, research scientists from DFO were the first ones in which, the first one in the world probably, defining areas that should be managed together to mitigate the spread of diseases. So you know that with those tools, you are reducing the risk. You cannot remove the risk. The risk is there, but you can mitigate it.
Yeah, well, that sort of brings me to a supplementary question for you. We hear more and more recently about the development of what are called recirculating aquaculture systems, or RAS systems, where you're actually growing salmon on land. And some of these facilities have recently come into production. I'm just, what do you think about that? Is that a good solution for the problems with open pen farming of salmon in the ocean?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that is not a bad solution. It's a solution that we need to keep investing right now in terms of cost. Cannot compete with ocean-based aquaculture because energy is expensive. Everyone wants an electric car, and energy prices are going up. So cannot, perhaps it's not competitive from the economical standpoint, but it has advantages from the ecological standpoint. So I think that I don't think that we should abandon one or the other. I think that we should keep researching both and exploring solutions in both open or ocean-based and land-based aquaculture.
I suppose, though, that this type of system on land would be quite energy intensive, and then a big issue would be, where is that energy, or how is that energy being generated, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Energy cost is very important. But at the same time, if you think about land-based systems, you can bring that land-based system close to the market. So you can save energy by having a salmon farm close to New York rather than having it in Newfoundland and tracking or shipping all that fish. So the aquaculture world is the supply chain is very complex, and we cannot oversimplify these nuances because it could have impact in costs and CO2 footprint.
Yeah, so maybe that's how it makes sense somehow of having one of these big facilities in Florida, for instance. Well, I'm just wondering if you could give us some idea of what other issues exist with respect to agriculture, aquaculture, as it's being practiced today around the globe.
Yeah, I think that it's very difficult to talk about those general aspects because it's highly dependent on the local environment and local communities. A farm can be great in one location, and you move exactly the same farm with the same practices to a different location, it can be terrible. What is important to consider is that, and I touched on this in a previous question, is site selection is very important. We need to develop tools that help us to understand how much fish or how many mussels we can grow in a system without impacts. And we need to bring local communities too. Sustainable aquaculture is not only about potential impacts on the benthos, it's not only about impacts to wild salmon, it's about what local communities want. So, and that has been traditionally overlooked, and is one of the major issues that decision makers have made in the past. We need to promote aquaculture. Wait a second, do local communities want aquaculture? Right. So that's something that I push very hard on my research to highlight that these aspects of aquaculture are very important to understand or to promote that sustainable aquaculture.
Yeah, very good point. Thank you for that. Well, I think we'd just like to round things up and end things with this question. I'd be interested to know your views of where you see aquaculture developing in the near and the medium term.
Yeah, so I think that aquaculture will keep increasing as a food production system. I don't think that there is any other way to provide seafood without aquaculture. What I can see, and I saw it already in the recent years, is the how technologies are making the sea food production system more efficient. I'm not the one who justifies all problems with new technologies, and new technologies are going to solve the problems. But I have seen some, and that's and I think that that's going to move forward. I think that the other major aspect in aquaculture is competition for space. We see more and more competition, especially in the Western world, for space among different activities. So I can imagine more ocean-based aquaculture, moving farms to the open ocean. And we have the technology to do that, or there are new emerging technologies that can allow us to do that. I think that we will need to consider climate change. That's, you know, it's there, it's here. So heat waves, high temperatures, low oxygen can impact animal welfare. And we will see a switch in species distribution where we grow salmon, where we grow trout, where we work mussels. So that can play a role. And as I mentioned, I think that the governance of aquaculture to recognize that local communities play a role on sustainable aquaculture is a major change. I think that researchers around the world are putting not pressure, but raising awareness that this is very important to consider. And just because you have a plan to expand aquaculture, you know, that perhaps doesn't happen because the local communities do not want it. And so, yeah, I think that major changes in governance, that with a more participatory role of communities will happen if we want to fully embrace sustainable aquaculture.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for bringing the sort of the importance of the human dimension and the community involvement and so on into the discussion about this. Well, Dr. Figueira, thank you very much. You've covered a lot of ground, and I think we're all the better for knowing and hearing some of the many things you've discussed today on Edible Oceans Podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Edith again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Edible Ocean. I also manage our Instagram, which you can follow us on at @EdibleOcean_podcast. You can reach Professor Tony through his website at theindustrialdiet.com. If you've got a second, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review the podcast on whatever app you're listening on. It really helps people find us. And finally, this podcast was produced with funding from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada.